Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow with you again with Jeff Andresian and Sam Williamson and our guest, David Cook. And we've been on the phone with him for about 10 minutes, and already he's one of our best friends. this is just what he's like, and we haven't even seen him face-to-face yet. So we are really looking forward to this call, all the more just because we've gotten to know him in the last few minutes, but also because we have seen his heart reflected through the books that he's written, the movie that's come out of that, and just the things that we've heard about him from those he's touched in some way. So, David, thank you for coming around the campfire with us tonight.
Wow, what a privilege. Absolutely. I am so moved to be involved with you guys tonight.
Well, you know what, let me start with this. Everyone that's listening understands the power of story in general, the power of their own personal story for understanding what God has done and is doing, and then, of course, the power of the greater story that all of us live in, the real, true context of life that God has created. So I'd love to start with you asking you this question. How did God orchestrate, architect, engineer where you are today? I know that's a huge question, but what did he first start putting in your heart when you were young? And then obviously, you know, looking at your bio, you know, I can see in your education, you knew what you were on to. You knew what you wanted to pursue. But take us back a little bit earlier on that, the discoveries, the enlightenments, the kind of epiphanies that you had as you discovered, this is what I'm passionate about, compelled to do and study and bring to others.
Well, I moved 14 times by the age of 12, and I just got tired of, you know, losing friends. So I just started hanging out with my dog, and we'd go hunting every day. I'd come home from school. I had a collie named Lassie. I mean, I was just the poster child for Lassie. And I'd go out to this field, about 300-acre field down in Texas, and every day I'd take my BB gun out there and shoot something that I feel sorry about now. But anyway, I learned the color of all the birds and reptiles and things I'd shoot, and but basically, I was.
It was educational value.
It was. I was just. Hey, we used to. You remember those people who used to put those pins through butterflies and put them on the board?
Yeah.
Man, I always felt sorry for the butterflies. Anyway, I did it with. I did it with BBs. But every day I hung out with my dog, and I would dream. I would lay in the fields and look at the sky and watch the clouds go by, and God was close to me. He was like he was the only thing that kept my heart going. And my dad and mom had me in church every day, every Sunday. We were called 2-hour churchgoers. We went to Sunday school and church every day of my life. And but it was about the age of 14. Anyway, God just really, in that lonely time, he showed up, and I knew he was near always. Sport was big to me as well. When I was about 14, two men came into my life. One was my golf pro, Johnny Arriaga, and Johnny was just a great mentor to us young guys. He was out playing with me one day. He was on his way to shooting a 61. He's on number 17 there at this little golf course in Waco that's now been plowed up and defunct and gone under, but he hit it up there about 6 inches on the hole. He turns and puts his club in his bag, and he says, "Picasso." And I'd heard him say that about 17 times that day, and finally I said, "Johnny, what do you mean Picasso?" And he said, "Come here, Cookie." He puts an arm around me, and standing up there on that tee box, he says, "What do you see looking out there? I hadn't hit yet." I said, "Well, there's a green out there and there's a flag." He says, no, "What do you see?" Well, I just reversed. I said, "Okay, there's a flag and there's a green." You know, I didn't know what he was getting at. He says, "Son, listen, golf is like art." He said, "You got a blank canvas in front of you. You got to create this picture. You got to create the painting of what you want to have happen before you hit it. You got to get your mind out in front of the golf ball instead of behind the golf ball." And the way I teach it now, behind the golf ball is that's where the golf swing is. In front of the golf ball is where the game's played. And there's so much prophetic utterances and all this stuff that I do, and I can see that God began to move me in a direction to help people perform in life, when really it was all just a prophetic setup for what he's doing in a spiritual way with me and men and myself. Johnny said, "Golf is an art." He said, "Son," he said, "you got to paint a masterpiece." He said, "I just choose to paint a masterpiece before I hit my shot." And he said, "And when I hit it and it ends up like that one, I simply put the club in my bag and sign the painting, Picasso. Wow. I'm 14. I'm getting a lesson in my life, and I just, you know, and then he says something like this. He says, and if you don't choose to paint masterpieces in your life, you're gonna spend your life dealing with a lot of stick figure outcomes. And I'm 14. I get that message, and I begin to understand there's the mind, how the mind, you know, plays in performance. And as a believer, you know, some of my favorite verses were, be anxious for nothing, but pray and ask God with thanksgiving. So there's all these verses in the Bible that talk to us about think, you know, think this way. You know, God talks about Jesus talks about in Matthew about who can add anything to his life through worry. It's just so interesting to know that the greatest, this is going to sound trite probably, but it's in my world, sports psychology textbook was given to us, you know, thousands of years ago, and that God understood, because he created such an amazing body, that he understood how our mind works, and it takes us out of the game, both the games of life and the game of life, which is about eternity. So I understood really early from this guy to begin to look at how the mind affects performance, because potential really doesn't matter on game day. What really matters on game day is that you got to have more than potential. You got to be able to control the mind in the midst of this incredible interference, like the San Antonio Spurs are about to have in a few minutes. And I worked for them for 8 years, so I've been there a couple of times when we won the world championship, and several times when we lost. Anyway, so Johnny really kind of got me interested in that area. Another guy came along, his name was James Robinson. He was an evangelist. He was coming to schools, and he was saying, you know, telling us to say no to drugs, and he would drop in a little nugget of God here and there. It was back when you could still have an evangelist at the school, and he invited the football team down that night. He said, which of you guys are brave enough to come down to the rodeo arena tonight to hear what I have to say to you? And he's about 6'4", got those dark beady eyes. He looked right through us, so we all raised our hand. And about 12 of us went down. I'm telling you what, lightning struck that night, and Jesus became the Lord of my life. I'd been in Sunday school and church my whole life. He became the Lord that night. Everything changed 180 degrees. I had this adventure going of how to teach people and explore how the mind affects performance, and my faith journey going along there.
Was your passion, when you talk about performance, your passion was primarily in sports, right? And in golf, when you first encountered this idea.
Yes, yeah. Sport was my life. You know, that was my identity. And I lived and died by, you know, the score on game day. So that's why the whole mental game was so important to me.
So you have this experience with this man on the golf course. Something is stirred in you. You come to this place with Christ. Now this enters into the mix with you. So keep going.
Yeah, so I end up going to University of Virginia. I studied there under a guy named Bob Rotella, who's really the foremost sports psychologist in the world right now, and I was his first student. It was a really cool place to went. But everything I learned, I really filtered through the Word, through the Bible, and I could understand and see why this stuff works, and it's because of the way God set us up. Let's move forward a little bit. This is a cool story. So I have a group of guys, like you guys get your Noble Heart group together for gatherings. I was doing it in Utopia 6-7 years ago, before the book came out, and I was praying in the middle of our ranch, 3,000 acres. These are small ranches in Texas. That'd be big in Virginia, but it's in my wife's family, and right in the middle of the ranch, there's this patch where we plant oats in the wintertime to give sustenance to the animals, and I go out in the middle of that because there's these hills, we call them Texas mountains, all around, and I like to go right out there and every morning and just watch the sun come up and just pray. So I went out there, had 12 guys coming. I was a Wednesday, went out there and prayed. And said, Lord, what is it you want to speak to me about and share with these guys this weekend? And it was a great time of just listening and talking and contemplating with him. And, you know, I didn't get the answer, but I knew I was in communion with him. And when you're in communion with him, you begin to notice things. And parables begin to fall out of the sky. I mean, Jesus taught in parables not that they would end when he died, but that we might look at life as a parable and begin to watch God move. Because his story is amazing, like you guys talk about. It's everywhere. So I walked out of this gate, of this field, opened the gate, closed the gate, and as I walked out, I noticed something. I know that God made me notice this, and it was an old plow and planter over in some cactus and weeds under a tree that had been pulled out of that field probably about 70 years before to never do what it was made to do again. It was a relic. Now, that'll preach, too, but this story isn't about that. But some people, there's probably some guys on this phone call that, you know, feel like they're sitting around, they're an antique, they're a relic, and they've been relegated to being useless. And it's, wow, God never is done. I love it when Caleb came in at 80 and said, give me the mountains with the big guys.
Yeah.
So I looked over there, and I was curious, and I walked over, and I was wondering how this whole thing ever worked, and there was a seed bin on it. It was about 1/4 full of seed that had been meant to be planted 7 years ago, sitting in that seed bin to rot, to never, ever produce fruit. And I knew at that moment, God just ripped through my heart and said, that's you, men that are on the way Friday night. Yes, he said he has planted eternity in every man's heart. That as a kid, as a child, God begins to move and weave himself through life all around and in and through us and gives us these dreams to become the extraordinary human that he's called us to be so that he might live in and through us and change eternity. And what happens, that seed is planted and then it gets stuck either through a bad experience, a label someone pushes on us, or some poor experience or whatever it might be. But we walk around with a seed bin full of seed from God that never gets planted. We went out to that field that night, had a little campfire like we're having right now on the phone, and it was a moonless night in October. It was dark. The stars were out in Texas. It was amazing. I mean, Utopia is in the middle of nowhere, and this is 5 miles out of nowhere. I mean, this is really in the middle of nowhere. And I said to those guys, I said, as we went by that seed bin into that field, take a seat. And each guy reached in and grabbed it, and I told him the story, and I said, listen, guys, God's got a message in that seed. He's speaking to you right now. And I just believe in Jeremiah 33:3. That he called him, he'll answer you and tell you deep and unsearchable things you not even know. And so we're going to take him at his word. If you can't take God at his word, you can't take anybody at their word. And if you can't take God at his word when he says it in the Bible, then know the Bible's true. So all of it's true. He's real. He's true. Tonight we're taking him at his word. I want you to ask God what that seed is in your life. And then I want you to kneel down in this ground with your bare hands and dig a hole and plant it as a symbol to him that you are releasing it back to him so that he can use it and move through you to change the world. We moved out concentrically into the dark. You couldn't see your hand. It was just pitch dark. And I began to hear guys weeping all over that field. It sounded like the, you know, coyotes in the distance. I mean, it was an amazing experience. Make the hair on the back of your head stand up. And then I realized something. I had some seed in my hand. And I said, okay, this isn't just a lesson for these guys. What does it mean? And I felt the presence of God speak to me as loud as a foghorn in my ear, say, I called you to write. And that was new. That was out of the blue. I say out of the blue as out of the blue of heaven, because that was not really on my radar. And probably 3 weeks or so later, I planted that seed. And I said, yes, I was at that little cafe in Utopia in the smoky old fried cafe place, and this guy had written this handwritten note, posted it on the bulletin board right next to the checkout counter with a thumbtack that said, Utopia Driving Range, come find your game. I noticed again, God had me look, he had me notice, he had me into that day, and there's not a golf course within 60 miles of that place, so the note, oh, it also said Utopia Driving Range next to the cemetery. And so I knew where the cemetery was, so I went out there, and this old goat rancher just plowed up this field and put a driving range about 10 steps outside of this glorious old beautiful oak-filled cemetery. I'm sitting there looking at this deal. There's 3 pieces of AstroTurf, the worst golf balls you've ever seen. There's no markings, hardly any dimples. There's a 300-yard plowed cow pasture with a barbed wire fence you have to clear. There's caliche and weeds growing up everywhere, And there's this sign that says $3 for a small bucket, $5 for a large bucket. Put your money in this welded slot in this metal pole. And then you got these balls, and you begin to hit them. And they're like dying quail flying through the air because none of them were balanced. And I laughed out loud. You know, you're sitting there right by the cemetery, and you're the only person out there. And you think it's a joke. Candid camera must be somewhere. But I caught one on the sweet spot, and I went, whoa. You know, this is what life's about. It doesn't matter if I'm at Pebble Beach or wherever, the sweet spot's what it's about. I hit it on the sweet spot and went, this is why we come. This is why we play. This is why we live. And then I heard God say, this is the spot. Write the book.
Huh.
And I went home, got my computer out on this 1875 farmhouse front porch, put my fingers on the computer, took a deep breath, wrote this line. How can a game have such an effect on a man's soul? took a deep breath, prayed, and for the next 6, 7, 8 hours, the words just flowed through my hands, and the story came out, and the chapters were written out of order, and God would give me these ideas and concepts, and that continued to happen across the next year, and this book came together, and that's what happened. Nobody wanted it, but I tell you what, at that seed bin, that's where those two men, those two influences in my life from the age of 14, the sports, the golf professional Johnny and the evangelist, they merged right there, because I knew when I wrote a book that it wasn't going to be a sports psychology book and I'd stop. You know, I knew that I had to go ahead and do what some people would call political suicide and add the faith part in there. But I also knew that I would not live life and only give people part of the answer. And so God orchestrated it so that the message was able to be woven in there. And then no one wanted it, but what happened is God began to move it across the country through men. Just, they'd print it off and they'd spread it, and then finally it exploded, and next thing I know, some guy said, I want it to be a movie, and then Robert Duvall said, I want to be Johnny. And here I am now on the other side of that, and I'm just taking a breath and going, God is amazing. And he is the orchestrator, and he puts the pieces together that I could never put together. By that, also, he told me I didn't have to raise the money, and I went, that's good. He said, I've already called. Because I didn't even sell lemonade when I was a kid. I mean, he said, I've already identified the investor team for this movie. Your job is just to call them and ask them if they're on the team. And I went, oh, well, that's a different way of asking for money. I didn't ask for money. I just said, are you on the team? And last, 2 years ago in the economy, you know what the guys with the economy was like. God brought in $15 million for that movie.
Wow.
By me calling guys and saying, hey, Jeff, did God tell you to be on the team? And Jeff would go, well, let me ask my wife and we'll pray and call you back. And yep, boom. It was amazing how all that happened. So I'm here to say, guys, that I'm just I'm flying in the wake of the lead goose, Jesus, and I'm not going to get out of the wake if possible, because I know what that's like. And it's the journey we're looking for. It's the sacred journey. It's the adventure that every man is looking for, is when we begin to walk, he takes that sphere, he takes our platform, and he says, you watch this. And every man has a platform. So sorry I talked so much, but there you go.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, so let me ask one more question, then I will give space for Jeff and Sam as well.
So is that your one question, Gary? That's your third question.
No, this is part B now, or C.
Okay, all right.
Okay,
go ahead.
So just real quickly. So here you describe, you write this book out of obedience. It flows, as you said, nobody wanted it. People were copying it off and handing it to others. All of a sudden, it takes off. All of a sudden, and I realize this is over time, there is a movie. What was that like to go from a book that all of a sudden has traction to a movie of the book? I mean, what occurred as a result of those two things?
Let me tell you the story a little bit. First of all, the young man in the book, he's very contemplative, so he has a lot going on in his head. And you can do that in a book, but in a movie, you can't have the whole movie a voiceover. And so it took about 2 years to write the screenplay to really pull things out, because we had to create characters to pull this information out. I felt like, I'm just going to say this, I felt like the movie was an absolute bloody battle. It was, the enemy tried to screw it up every way he could, and it started with the whole screenplay. I mean, these guys said they took off and went to write the screenplay, and they came back, and it was a different story, and I just went, wow. Well, you know, you don't know how plays work and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, I know how stories are told, and I know this is God's story, and I know God said to film this, and, you know, why can't we just keep the story? I mean, what's so hard about Johnny and this kid, you know, going out and playing golf? And I mean, what's so hard about that? So it really took me getting into it, and then I had to sort of write the screenplay with these people. And then the movie started, and I brought some guys in to help me with the movie. And I'm telling you guys, agendas started getting in the way, and my calling, I was the executive producer, meaning to shepherd the movie and to raise the money and stuff, but all of a sudden, man's way got in the way. They said, you know, you've gotten this this far, but now it's like having, you know, you letting your baby go off to college. Your baby's grown up now, so you let us take it. We know how to make movies, and you need to get out of the way. And it was a horrible experience, really was. And eventually, the faith message began to get more and more watered down. And I knew that we were losing the ability for this movie to change lives quickly unless something happened. And so the investors actually rescued this movie and removed these guys and got it back. And then again, this was God's, you know, you look at the whole thing and he won't be defeated. And so in the end, the Lord said, the movie ends just like the book with the guy standing over the putt and the putt's moving towards a hole and you don't know if it goes in. And that's the answer to the question in the beginning. Does it really matter? And so that's the answer to the movie in the book. Does it really matter? We got to get past that to be the best we can be. And so the movie ends, but God said at the end, to continue the journey, go to didhemaketheputt.com. And God gave me another chapter, really it's probably the first chapter of the sequel I'm writing. And he said, just go walk out in that cemetery in Utopia, film this thing, put it on the web and let people come to it, and then give everyone that sees the movie or reads the book a chance to bury their lives, to get rid of the stuff that's holding them back. And then give them a chance at the end of burying their lives to cross the line with Jesus, death to life. Give them a chance. And then even put a prayer there that they can pray and check the box. And so the movie itself, Duvall says God in it a few times. You see the kid change his life, but doesn't beat anybody over the head. Then you give people an opportunity that have to have the answer to the question to go to the website. And then you give them, after they hear that, you give them a chance. And really, that's a chance for me to tell people who the true champion is and what a true champion is. That's what I do in the cemetery. It's really about there's only one guy that could ever stand on a pedestal and not be knocked off, and that was Jesus. And the rest of us, you know, all the media does is put you up there so that they get back in the shadows and wait for the fall.
Right, right.
Because it's going to be a great story when you fall.
Right.
Right. So anyway, I got to teach the theology of that, and that was important. I felt like the Lord. But then the next step was people get to bury their lives in that. Well, here's what happened. So far, about 700,000 people have gone to that website. And as of yesterday, 8,300 people buried their lives, sent them to me, and accepted Jesus as their Lord and Savior.
Wow.
That is stunning. I want to cry every time I talk about that, because God took something that I almost lost in the making of it and the bloodbath that went on, and the movie got watered down a lot. But eventually the Lord said, here's the strategy, and gave me a new strategy. I almost got sued by all these people that said, you can't do that. We didn't get in this movie so you could put that ending in there. I mean, it was just, gosh, I mean, it is amazing to fight the Hollywood deal to get this where we got it. And so I just want you guys to know I'm absolutely in awe. God can do what he wants, when he wants, how he wants, and he'll get the job done.
Yeah.
That just floors me. Every time I get to tell this story, that absolutely floors me.
And he gave you the strength and the courage to fight that battle with him or for him. I mean, that impresses me too. I mean, God will get it done, but I've seen so many times, and sadly in my own life, when he says, now step up and let's fight this together, and I can easily back down. That's just a remarkable story.
I need to say this because I think you guys are all about this. I'm sure when you gather and you talk, this has got to be your message. I know it is. I mean, I just know in my spirit it is. That for you to be able to do, for me to be able to do what I did, I needed a Jonathan. You know, David
right.
would never have gotten to the, he never would have gotten to the temple without Jonathan, who was one of the great characters of the Bible.
Yeah.
Paul would have been run out of town and crucified if it hadn't been for Barnabas. You know, Moses
right.
needed Aaron. And we need a guy. We need a guy in our corner. We need a guy in our life that looks into us. This isn't like accountability brother deal, you know. This is a guy that says, David Cook, listen, when I pray about you and I talk to God about you, let me tell you what I see and I hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
God has your back. He's hemmed you in the front. You need to walk like a man on a mission from the God of the universe, and you need to listen to him and to him only. And you need to stand firm against these guys' agendas. You need to walk with the strength and the might of God. You need to walk understanding that when God calls you to something, it isn't a committee deal. You know, I needed to hear that, and I didn't have that for a while, but then a guy came along beside me. I actually thought those guys were going to be that, but they ended up being the naysayers, and it was so difficult. But the strength comes from Jesus and those he puts in our life that he says, that guy's going to be your Jonathan. And so yeah. there's points in our life, and I think everybody on the phone needs to hear this. There's points in our life when we need to assume the role of David, when God calls us, and that seed, whatever that seed is that I sort of planted with you guys, that seed is your calling, and that calling is yours alone. It's not a committee seed. But what happens is that we need a Jonathan. We need someone to speak into our life. We need encouragement. We need that. And that's what I'm sure that's what you guys are all about. And certainly when we get together, that's what we need. So we need that to be a David, but we also need to be a Jonathan to someone else. We need to be speaking in another guy's life. And that is, man, just holding their arms up and saying, go for it.
Yeah. We have a good friend that says sometimes God calls you to be the golfer and take the swing, and other times he calls you to be the caddy for another guy to take the swing. That it's both those things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
amen.
David, this has been so good to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for just being with us. Your heart, your affect, your desire, your passion has affected us. And I can tell you, watching what's going on the chat line, everyone has really enjoyed you, and something has happened here. So thank you for tonight.
Oh,
thanks so much, David. Thanks so much.
All right.
Yeah.
Love you guys. Yeah. All you guys listening, man, I love you and the Lord, and we're going to spend eternity together. So save me about 10,000 years, and we'll tell stories.
Okay. All right.
All right.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. See ya.
Good night,
okay.
Everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.